Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. This is the 50th anniversary of Gideon versus Wainwright, the Gideon decision that ensured that everyone can have a lawyer at trial in this country, and something that we've covered over the last 20 years in this program in different forms. We were going to be interviewing Karen Hooper, who just wrote the book on the 50 years. She'll be coming on next week because she had an event tonight. All things got messed up with Morgan's basketball games, but we're here to discuss it. We thought we needed to wrestle with this on this on the anniversary of this 50th anniversary of Gideon, which we'll describe here. In the New York Times, there's an article, "Right to a Lawyer Can Be an Empty Promise for the Poor," was in the front page on March the 15th, just a few days ago. And in that article, two Baltimoreans were quoted talking about cases in Baltimore. One was Doug Colbert, who's been on the show many times, professor of law here at the University of Maryland, Carey School of Law, and Iten Naguib, who is a second-year law student at the University Law School. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
And Deborah Gardner is with us again. It's been a while since she's been on. It's good to have her back, who is legal director for the Public Justice Center that we've been associated with in many forms over the years. And good to have you in the studio, Deborah.
Thank you very much, Mark.
So can we just take a minute and just describe Gideon 50 years ago? Deborah?
In 1963, the Supreme Court ruled that the Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right to an appointed lawyer for a poor person who's facing felony criminal charges and can't afford to hire a lawyer. It was originally based on a handwritten petition that Clarence Gideon filed in the Supreme Court himself. And Abe Fortas, who later became a Supreme Court justice, was appointed by the court to represent Mr. Gideon before the Supreme Court, which speaks, I think, to the power of the appointment of counsel for poor people to advance important issues in the law.
And the law specifically says that people have a right to a lawyer.
There's a constitutional right in all felony cases. Gideon began with the idea that before the court ruled, people charged with the most serious crimes represented themselves in many states across the country. They did not have a right to a lawyer. Without a lawyer, you're going to trial. The chances are very strong that you will be found guilty. Gideon changed the landscape of what a criminal felony trial looked like in America, in the United States. And within a few years after that, it was extended to misdemeanor trials. Misdemeanors is what people are usually arrested for. More than 90% of the arrests are for misdemeanor crimes. And then the court went so far as to deal with the big question, which is, when are you first entitled to a lawyer? Because trials are really a rarity in our system. Not very many people get trial. They either plead guilty or the charges are dismissed. So now the question became when, and the court said at critical stages of a criminal prosecution. What's a critical stage? It's where you a lawyer's presence would make a difference in guaranteeing you a fair trial and protecting your liberty.
But what we're finding is that at least the article in the New York Times and that they talked about, and that I know you've been all working on this room, that many indigent arrestees do not have lawyers at bail hearings, don't have lawyers in their trials, don't have lawyers, and they end up doing time in prison. So in some senses, like our prisons have been, we were talking about this morning in another meeting, the amount of men, let's say, who are in jail for not paying child support. So our prisons become debtors' prisons. These men come up and they don't have lawyers and they end up doing time. Iten, tell me about your role in all this, because you were quoted in the Times as well.
Right. So I'm a second-year law student at the University of Maryland, and I was actually in Professor Colbert's clinic last semester. And the clinic is an access to justice clinic where there were eight of us students in that clinic, and we represented about 30 people, 30 defendants who were currently or who were serving jail time at that point, who had not gone to trial, had not been convicted of any of their charges, but were still in jail because they couldn't afford to pay their bail. And so we were able to represent these clients, and we had a great showing. But so essentially my role in all of this is specifically the client that was mentioned in the New York Times, Mr. Carl Himes.
Right.
When he was originally arrested, he was arrested on charges of, you know, shining a laser pen at a police car. And he was arrested, and when he went before a commissioner, there was no attorney, there was no legal representation for him, and the commissioner set the bail at $75,000. When 3 days later, he had public defender as a as his legal representation, and that bail went down to $200 cash. So if we're talking about the impact that an attorney can make at such an initial stage, just as Professor Colbert was just discussing the critical stage of a hearing, the initial stage is the initial appearance is obviously very critical. When you look at the difference between a $75,000 bail and a $200 bail.
And ITEN's client, Mark, I should add, had never before been arrested in his life. He was attending college, you know, and for whatever reason, without a lawyer present and without a transcript being made, the judicial officer decided that $75,000 was the appropriate bail, which would be, in our view, an unlawful decision. But there's no lawyer there. So then the bail gets to be $200. He still stays in jail for 19 days because the family cannot come up with the $200. Then ITEN and her colleagues get involved, and they're able to explain the bail process of what someone has to do. And within 2 days, the family was able to bail him out of jail, and he was able to return home.
So, Deborah Gardner, I mean, what is the state of this now? I mean how serious and critical, from your perspective, and working Public Justice Center, is it when it comes to the right of indigent people or others to have lawyers?
Well, the issue of bail determinations and initial appearances is particularly important and timely in Maryland right now because it's in litigation and it's before the legislature. But the broader picture, both in Maryland and nationally, is that the promise of Gideon has really never been fulfilled, and indigent defense across the country is in a state of crisis, perhaps a bit less so in Maryland, but recently, because of the budget crisis that many states are facing, the public defender in Maryland, the staff is way down, the caseloads are way up, and so from beginning to end in criminal proceedings, it's very difficult for people to get high quality representation, despite how hard and working and how dedicated our brothers and sisters in the Office of the Public Defender are. 95% of cases that where the charges are not dropped are disposed of by a plea bargain. Many, many of those cases, it's not because the person's actually guilty, but because they have sat in jail for so long that they have essentially served the time they're going to get even if they are convicted. So they agree to plead guilty, even if they are not guilty, in order to get it over with and get on out of jail.
I mean, one of the things that folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888 as we look at this 50th anniversary of Gideon, what it means, and why we are still here in Maryland and in the United States of America in a position where even though you may have a right to a lawyer, it doesn't mean you're going to get a lawyer. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Maybe your own personal experiences can be brought to bear here in this conversation. We'd love to hear from you at 410-319-8888, because the more you meet people, the more you realize how many people have actually gone through this. This is not a rarity in working-class communities like Baltimore City. Something happens all the time.
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time, Mark, but it also happens to particular groups far more frequently than other groups. So the racial breakdown of people who are in jail waiting for a trial, not convicted of a crime, it's about 91% of the people in Baltimore City Jail are African American. If you go to the county, four times as many African Americans are in jail, not convicted, only there because they can't afford the bail. Four times as many as the population of African Americans. You go across every county in Maryland, disproportionately, it's a racial breakdown, and then it's a class breakdown. Because if we got arrested or people we knew got arrested, you'd come up with the $500 or the $300 or the $1,000 because you don't want someone staying in jail. But for people who economically are disadvantaged, they have no means to get out of jail. Other, as Deb is saying, sometimes the prosecutor will play the let's make a deal game, and they'll come around and say, you've been in jail for 7 days, 10 days, plead guilty, and you'll get time served.
That gives them a record.
It gives them a record. And the other thing that's so interesting for me is that statewide, see, this is not a Baltimore City issue. Statewide, only one out of three people who are arrested, roughly one out of three, are convicted. That means two out of three people who are arrested and charged with crime, ultimately their cases are dismissed or they're placed on the inactive STET calendar. But the process becomes the punishment. The process of arrest, when you don't allow people to be represented by counsel and you put a price on their freedom, that results in the loss of liberty. And our liberty is, frankly, in my opinion, our most precious commodity. So what Gideon's a wonderful story because you've got this drifter, this guy who had been in and out of prison who writes his petition, and he's an ordinary person. And he gets a big famous lawyer and law firm to represent him, and it's happening at the peak of the civil rights movement in 1963 when people are concerned with justice and poverty and injustice, and the court is listening to this. Finally, we get a whole change where now people are entitled to a lawyer at trial. And the dialogue among the justices is, well, if we give people a lawyer at trial, when are they supposed to have a lawyer for the first time? And several of the justices said, when their liberty's first at stake. But that's never been a case that's been heard by the Supreme.
So what do you all think? I'm both from your experience being around as a lawyer in public justice issues for a long time, Deborah, but also I-10, yours. You're new at this game. Mm-hmm. You're still in law school. So, what your perspectives on why we are in the situation we're in 50 years after Gideon, that we're still at a place where people do not have the right to – do not have a lawyer that they have the right to. From your perspective first, and then Deborah, and then we'll go back. Then we'll go to the phones.
From my perspective as a law student, it's really hard to reconcile because I study the law. And so when I study the law, I expect to see it performed as such. And when I studied Gideon and I saw that, you know, it's been held that everyone gets counsel, but it doesn't actually apply that way. And it's beyond me how it doesn't apply that way. I was expecting when I first got involved with this clinic, I didn't understand how big of an issue this mm-hmm. truly was. But even just being involved for a semester in this clinic, so I just did it for last semester. And I've become increasingly passionate about this issue because it really is such a core issue when it comes to, people being arrested. What happens at the initial appearance? It's critical. Especially as Professor Colbert just said, most of these cases get dismissed anyway. So if you're being, as Mr. Himes, my client that I was discussing in the New York Times, he was in jail for 19 days. His charges were also dismissed. He actually only on one of his charges, out of four charges, got a PBJ, which is probation before judgment. So he's not yet been convicted for anything at all, and he's been in jail for 19 days.
It's about money. It's about not allocating the resources in the state's budget to provide for lawyers for poor people and to provide enough money to provide enough lawyers for poor people to fulfill the promise of Gideon. It's pretty plain and simple. The Office of Public Defender here in Maryland has seen its staff greatly reduced in recent years, and its caseloads are twice what the ABA recommends, I understand. And at the same time, there's not a lobby for poor people accused of crime. In general, the public doesn't care unless it touches them personally. And once it's touched them personally, if they can't afford a lawyer, it's too late to start to care at that point. We need to care about everyone who might be in this situation, and we need to make it the social priority that the Constitution says it should be.
Oh, we just lost our callers. Call back 410-319-8888. Amani and the others, we want to hear your stories. 410-319-8888. If you call back, we'll get as many on as you can, and I'll interrupt my guest to get you on. 410-319-8888. I apologize.
And when it comes to an issue of money, what we have to realize is that when people do have a lawyer at the beginning of a criminal case, we, the public, save enormous amount of money because right now we're paying huge sums to keep people in jail every day. When you have a lawyer present Our data shows that 2.5 times as many people who are charged with nonviolent crimes will get released on recognizance. They won't have to go to a bail bondsman. They won't have to pay money that they don't have. And an additional 2.5 times as many people get the bail lowered to an affordable amount. So having a lawyer makes a huge difference in the outcome of a case. When I was a public defender in New York City, Mark, you know, right after Gideon was decided, that's when the public defender system was created. And we looked at these as freedom hearings. They weren't bail hearings. It was all about people's freedom. And not everyone gets out of jail. Mm-hmm. When people are a danger to community, when people are a flight risk, those folks are going to stay in jail. But most of people have enough ties in the community. They're not charged with serious violent crimes. So the question is, will they be able to go back to family? Will they be able to go back to school, to keep a job, to hold on to an apartment? Because the consequences of incarceration are not just loss of liberty. It's all these other factors that ultimately the taxpayers pay for.
410-319-8888. Ms. Johnson, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I think, you know, that I was listening to the issue at hand, and it's a very interesting issue. For me, I just think that it just handicaps an individual who don't have any economic value as far as regards to being able to pay for a lawyer. So therefore, they're in jail. And sometimes they're in jail and they become institutionalized before they can even get a trial. And just like the gentleman was saying earlier, now they have a record.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come out of jail, nobody wants to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they stay in long enough, like I said, they become institutionalized where they don't even know how to adjust in society. It handicaps the family. And It's a great concern. I think we as American people should want to equip all races, all people in society so that at least we can have an intact family and we can have children who are not, you know, without a father or without a mother.
Right.
Because they're incarcerated. We have to think about not only individuals that are in jail and have to wait for a trial, but what they're showing their children coming up, because they're our future as well.
So it's
at a disadvantage, and it's just unfortunate, and I hope that things will change, you know, we as an American people.
I think the points you raised, Ms. Johnson, are critical, because I mean that's the voice of reality about what people face. And I, in the last few minutes here, I mean, I think that the passion that you just described, the case of what happens to human beings caught up in the system and to families, the question is what really can be done? With people arguing, the public defenders has in this, on the show before, that, you know, we don't have the money, we don't, there's lawyers a bail hearing, the stuff you've been fighting for, Doug, you know, there's not enough money for us to take every case that comes in, no fiscal way we can do it. So what is the answer?
The answer is that the legal profession has to really step up here. And every principal player, judges, prosecutors, defense lawyers, the bar itself, has to recognize that what we do as a profession is that we help people. We help people get back on a path again. So lawyers get a really bad rap in many ways because we read about the horror stories. But indeed, the people who choose the career of public defender or choose to be what Deb Gardner is doing at the Public Justice Center, these are dedicated people. So what we need to do is we need to ask all of our principal players to realize that if you're going to have a justice system, you have to have a lawyer for the accused. And I would even go so far as to say that we have to really be thinking about a lawyer in civil cases.
So we'll come to that next week. The civil case, we're going to bring up Civil Gideon next week. So we have about 2 minutes left. So, I mean, what are your responses to what should be done? How do you change it?
I think I already said what I thought about that. More money. We needed greater appropriations, larger staff, reasonable caseloads, adequate training so that people can get the representation they need. Once they have a competent lawyer whose caseload isn't ridiculous, it's not rocket science.
And is it almost lawyer?
Well, I 100% agree. In my experience in the clinic, I think it was easier for my colleagues and I to do a more thorough investigation because we only had one or two cases,
right,
rather than a public defender who was considerably overloaded, and not for lack of effort, but it just, you know, a public defender can't do such as thorough of an investigation as we could because we have a very limited caseload. So I believe if there's more money in the system, it would allow for more for less of a caseload and more of an investigation process in the representation.
This is the beginning of our look at Gideon. I want to thank all three of our guests. You just heard Aitan Aghib, who is a second-year law student who is in Doug Colbert's other course, one of our other guests, professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law, and his law clinic, Deborah Gardner, legal director of the Public Justice Center. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Good to have you here. And people are down off to center stage to celebrate 50 years of Gideon and to talk about it and have a reception there. So enjoy.
We'll celebrate some of it.
Some of it. We have much more to do. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
On our way out of here, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis, Mark Gunnery, and Bobby Marvin Holmes. Our engineer today is Andre Melton. Our intern is Lila Warshaw. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast our past shows, get information about our guests and the work they do and the articles that have inspired these programs, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Stay tuned. Keep it moving. It's on its way. And I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.